Welcome to the Remote Edition podcast. I'm so excited that you're here. On this podcast, we bring you the latest from the world of remote work. We share stories from people working remotely from all over the world, whether they're entrepreneurs, digital nomads, freelancers, people who have remote jobs, or even people that run co-working spaces. We are sharing their stories. Whether you're already working remotely, whether you're thinking about it, or even managing a distributed team, this podcast is for you. A little bit of background about me and why I'm doing this. So I spent 6 years working in corporate sales roles in London, including the largest investment bank in the world, a San Francisco fintech unicorn. Despite these being quite impressive companies to work for a lot of people, I always felt like something was missing. And I did a lot of soul searching and asking myself why I felt like this. And I realized I just hated going into the office every single day. I became so bored of being in the same place, cramming in my holiday to 25 days. And I kept asking myself why we needed to do this when technology allows us to work from anywhere. The routine started to really get me down, so I did a lot of personal growth work and ultimately decided to take the risk, quit my job, start a podcast, and move to Bali to explore the world of remote work. And what I discovered in Bali absolutely amazed me. There are entire communities of super, super smart and talented people working and living remotely from all over the world, all doing different things and actually excited about their work. And most of them had left huge corporate jobs because they were restricted to staying in one place. From then on, I became obsessed with this way of working. It opens up so many opportunities for you to travel, spend more time with loved ones, or just do more things that you love whilst being more productive and generally happier. It also levels the playing field for global talent, which I think is something that can really change the economic landscape, solve issues in overpopulated cities, and ultimately contribute to reducing global inequality. And I just think this is so amazing. So I want to help more people take advantage of this incredible way of working. And through my guest stories, you will learn all about how they came to work remotely and the tips you can take into your own career and business. So this week we have Kathy McPool on the podcast. She is founder of Wanderers Wealth. She provides tax advice and legal advice to location independents and digital nomads and remote workers. I know what you're thinking. Oh my God, this is the girl I've needed my whole life. We talk all about how she quit her corporate law job in Australia to travel and move to Bali, and how she found that there were so many digital nomads moaning and complaining that they didn't know what to do with their taxes. And she realized, oh my God, I can help you. And Wanderers Wealth was born. So we chat all about that. She also chats about tips for anyone who is super confused about what to do with their taxes. So some amazing advice on there from Kathy. And I just love speaking with her because she's such a go-getter and her attitude is amazing. And she's definitely such an amazing inspiration. So I hope that you enjoy this episode, but please know I recorded this episode before the pandemic happened, so I just wanted to be clear on that in case some things might have kind of sounded a bit weird with today's tone. But I hope that you enjoy the episode and I'll speak to you next week. Perfect. Welcome, Kathy. Thank you so much for joining me today on the show. I'm so excited to delve into this exciting topic, but I would love it if you could first start by introducing yourself to the listeners.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast, Susie. Really appreciate it. My name's Kathy. I am a bit of a global citizen. I was born in Mexico, raised in Switzerland, moved to Australia 6 years ago, and now just traveling around the world. And I'm the founder and owner of Wanderers Wealth, which is an international tax consulting business, where I help digital nomads, remote workers, freelancers, everyone else who's traveling around the world and making their money online, figure out their tax residency, figure out their corporate structure, figure out their offshore bank accounts, all of that fun stuff.
Amazing. I feel like the listeners are going, finally, the girl I've been looking for right now. But yeah, I'm excited to go into everything. And you've got one of the best accents as well that I've ever heard. Like, I can hear a little twang of Australian every now and again. It's great. Okay, so let's start back in the day when you decided to go into law as a career. Where did that come from, and why did you decide to do it?
So my first degree was in international relations. So I was really into politics. Like, I was consuming the news like it was my Bible. And I was just kind of really interested in how the world works and where all the power comes from. So I really dived deep into that, really enjoyed it. And then after that, I figured I wanted to go into diplomacy, which is what actually took me to Australia. So I moved to Australia because I got a job at the Swiss embassy, nice. Moved across the ocean, and then dived deep into diplomacy. And after that year of working at the embassy, I knew I wanted to do a second degree. And I just kind of had the feeling that I wanted to impact people more directly. And I felt that my international relations degree wasn't really doing that. So that's why I decided I'm going to go for law, and like, I want to become a lawyer, help people more directly. It all came a bit also with a humanitarian aspect. I've always loved helping people. When I was 18, I traveled to Vietnam by myself and I volunteered for a month. And then the year following, I went to Uganda and spent 2 months volunteering there. So I always wanted to, you know, kind of have a direct impact on people. So then I was looking at degrees in law, and I knew I wanted to practice eventually international law. So I knew I needed to look for a degree in a Commonwealth country. And as I was already in Australia, I was like, yeah, sweet, let's do it. And yeah, that's how I fell into law, so to speak.
Amazing. What part of Australia were you in at the time?
I moved to the Gold Coast to do my degree in law. Yeah, which was like perfect because I was basically stuck in Canberra, the political capital of Australia. And I was like, this isn't really the Australia I had thought it would be. Yeah. So when I moved to the Gold Coast, it was really the Australia that I'd always, you know, seen in pictures, the beaches. Yeah. It's beautiful here. Yeah, it's where I currently am at. So yeah, it's gorgeous.
I can imagine. It sounds like such a contrast launching a law career on the Gold Coast. To me, it sounds so like, what a mix of things. But yeah. I love that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it was such a surprise for me as well to kind of find that degree. And honestly, it was all geared because it was at a private university, but they offer fast track programs, which is basically doing a law degree in 2 years instead of three. So for me, it was all about how can I sell this best to my parents, you know?
Yeah.
how can I convince them? So yeah, that was good. And
I promise I'm studying, right, I'm not surfing every day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Amazing.
I initially didn't think I would end up doing tax law at all, like never have. But looking back, it's funny because actually already in my undergraduate, I was always kind of focused on economics and finance. Mm. And when I went to Uganda and did that volunteering, it was through a social enterprise that was doing microfinancing. So I've always kind of been around that financing world. And then the uni I was doing law at didn't really have any humanitarian courses. And the only international subjects that they had was in finance and business and law, tax law. So I was like, okay, I'll do that.
Yeah. Okay. Got you. So then could you just tell us a little bit? So that's your studies. You qualified as a lawyer. Then presumably, and I know we chatted a bit about this as well, you then went and worked in the industry. So talk us through kind of your corporate experience and what that was like.
Well, all throughout my studies, I'd always been working in a tax firm. So and it kind of went together with my studies, which I was so lucky to do both at the same time. So I was working at an international tax law firm and at the same time studying international tax law. And it just worked together perfectly. At the firm, we specialized more on like corporate structuring, international corporate structuring. But we also had here and there a few individuals who had like an international profile and didn't know what to do. Like the last one I remembered was people living on yachts who had idea, you know, where to pay their taxes. And that's, I guess, where it all started, where I started kind of figuring out tax residencies. And yeah, it was a great experience. It was very unconventional corporate trajectory that I had. So I started with a guy here on the Gold Coast who had just created his law firm. So when I started, we were three people. And 2 years later, when I left, we were 15 people. So I really had that opportunity to build up with him that whole business, you know, and see how he was doing it. And I guess that also gave me the push to do my own thing, because I was like, yeah, I can do this. Like, if he can do it, if I've been through the whole thing, I can possibly do it. So to be honest, once it got bigger, there were more structure in place, you know, with a lot more people, you need to put in a lot more regulations. And so I kind of didn't enjoy that anymore. Like, I couldn't just work from home anymore as I was able to, also because I was, you know, young. And then it's just weird sometimes in an office when you've got people who are 40 years old working and you're like one of the youngest, yet you've got more privileges. Of office structures, it gets really weird sometimes. And I was working a lot, so like I was easily there the whole time from the, you know, moment that I woke up till the evening. And then as I became an accredited lawyer and I was just working, I was like, is this it? Like, is this what I'm gonna do till forever? And I just that's when I started looking kind of into myself and be like, you know what, I really miss traveling. Like, I haven't done any volunteering, I haven't done any traveling. I've sort of put that on hold because I was doing the studies and working full-time as well. So then I left, I remember I left for Sri Lanka to go and travel, and that sort of really sparked my love for traveling again.
I love Sri Lanka. Back,
it's so beautiful. Yeah. And then coming back from that holiday was just the toughest thing ever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, having to sit back into the office again, and then by that time new structures were in place. So for my next holiday that I had already planned, although I didn't really have any more holidays left, I had to like put in a request and whatnot. And I was just like, man, I cannot have someone like dictate over my whole life. And I was just so fed up. I know I haven't done it for a long time. I know some people do it for 10 years and respect, but I was just, I felt like I couldn't breathe anymore. So I just
I totally agree. And I feel like it's such a shame as well, because there's one thing about being passionate about a subject like finance or economics or that kind of thing, but it's also having to practice your subject in that specific way of turning up to the same place every day, having the same schedule of 9 till 5. But, you know, for, I mean, both of us in our previous jobs, it wasn't exactly 9 till 5, but like having to be in the office at the same kind of time of the day. It's just such a shame, because that's not good. Like, one size doesn't fit all, if you know what I mean. So it's so annoying, like, that is the way that you have to do it, especially in quite corporate subjects like finance and economics. If you have a passion for those things, it seems like there's only one real way of kind of practicing it, if that makes
so
sense.
So true. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's healthy at all, to be honest. No. You know, like, and sometimes you don't even get along with everyone, and then there's tensions every day, and you go into that environment every day. I was just like, no, I can't do this. But at the same time, it was also really personally motivated. Like, when I grew up in Switzerland, so a lot of times in Switzerland, when people finish high school, they will go off and do a gap year, which all of my friends did. And I was so jealous, because my parents pushed me more towards the academic fields, and they're like, nah, you just go and finish, do your studies. And so I never had that gap year. And then after, when I did like my law degree, was admitted as a lawyer, everything, I kind of felt like, I want my gap year. Like, I never did that. So honestly, it was really personally motivated more than anything. And then, I remember calling up my mom and being like, you know what, I'm just going to book a 1-week ticket, because we were going to celebrate Christmas with the family together in Thailand. So I was like, I'm just going to book a 1-way ticket and see what happens. And,
amazing.
You know, for me, for me, knowing that I was a lawyer already at that time, knowing that I had a job, was more than anything a cushion to fall back on if anything, you know, if I would run out of money or whatnot. So I was like, I'll just go for it.
Yeah, exactly. And was there any kind of fear at this point? Were you, because for the people listening, I think a lot of them have corporate jobs, but they would love to do something like this, but it is just quite scary. But I think that's a great mentality that you have. You know, I have this law, I'm qualified lawyer, so I've got something to fall back on. Like, it's a great mentality to have. Did you have any fear before you did it?
No, not at all. Like, I just knew within myself that if I didn't do it now, then I would just be so frustrated later down the road. And I was already kind of, you know, seeing a bit all the negatives within the office. So I was like, I just, it's not the environment right now for me. And now more than anything, I long to travel. So why not do it now? I already had some savings, and yeah, I knew that was the right thing for me. But definitely a lot of people tell me now, you know, they didn't tell me back then, but they're like, I don't know how you just left, you know, knowing that you've studied for almost 8 years and like worked so much. And I was like, that was not the issue for me. Like, I never felt like I was giving something up. If anything, I thought I was going to gain something, so much experience through traveling, through, you know, learning what else there is outside in the world, and always having that knowledge in the background that I have a law degree, that I am a lawyer. So it only pushed me, if anything, towards leaving and going.
That's amazing. I love that. And that's so, it's so true. Just because you chose to study something for X amount of years, when you look in a typical lifetime, that is actually quite a small part of it. So why should you, just because you study something for that many years, commit to doing that for the rest of your life, even if you don't like it? Like, it's not necessarily the right thing to do. I think that's great. Okay, so you quit your job, you went to, so you booked this one-way ticket. Where did you go?
Well, when I made that decision, that was around May, June, what was it, 2018? Yes. And then about 2 months later, I met my partner.
And oh yes, I love this story. When you told me this, I was like, this is so cute.
Yeah, I know, it's funny. Honestly, it's funny how the universe sometimes works. When you make a decision, just like everything fast forwards and the universe just pushes you towards that. So 2 months later, I met my partner, who's a travel photographer, travel blogger. And we met in Bali, just hit it off, and he was like, do you want to come and travel the world with me? And I was like,
what's a question?
I'm already gonna go and travel the world. You come with me. And then everything went way quicker than that. So I went home and like sold everything I had, quit my job, and then I left to Bali again. That was like the starting point. So I didn't even have to wait for Thailand till the end of the year. I started before that.
Oh, that's amazing. So romantic. I think everybody wants to hear that question. Will you come and travel the world with me? I love that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
okay, so tell us a little bit more then around, so you're traveling around with him. Tell us a little bit more around how the idea came about for Wondrous Wealth. How were you thinking at that time, right? How am I going to make money? Because I think for people, like, I'm from banking background as well, and I struggled with this, with something that's very corporate, a specialism that's very corporate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be quite difficult, because in my head, I was like, well, I'm not going to create a bank. Like with law as well, sometimes you might be thinking, well, in this whole kind of startup scene, what can I do? How did that thought process work, and how did you eventually land on Wondrous Wealth?
Okay. I was very lucky. So when we made that decision that we were going to go and travel the world, we kind of started to think, you know, how can I make some money? How can I sustain myself? Because for him, it's his job, right? To travel and photography and all of that. So first up, I started to think about freelancing, you know, do the odd job here and there. I've got a lot of skills that I could possibly, you know, match with on jobs that are online. And I speak five languages, so I was like, I should go into the translation work or anything, something like that. And as we were thinking, like, every day a little bit about that, we then went for dinner with a couple of friends, and it was in Bali, and they randomly started talking about their taxes, and they
were all over the dinner table.
Yeah, I know. They were all digital nomads, and I think they were from New Zealand and some from Australia. And I was like, I remember looking at my partner going like, why are people talking about the taxes? This is so weird. Like,
so funny. Not,
yeah. And they're like, oh, I don't know what to do with it. And listening to them, I was just like, I think I can help you. Like, and I had to raise my voice and be like, I think I can help you actually.
Amazing.
Like, send me an email. And so I had my first three clients before I even went back and quit my job. Because I was just like, you know, I kind of know the law, certainly of Australia, and I can look into other countries as well. Like, I know how to basically figure it out. So I can help you. And that was honestly how Wondrous Wealth was created, just by seeing that there was a need out there. And, you know, if it's discussed during a dinner conversation, it means there certainly is a need for it. And I just had the right skills that would sort of fit that need.
That's amazing.
Really fortunate with that. Yeah, I never thought I'd be doing what I'm doing now. As I said, I was ready to, like, do, you know, any sort of freelancing work to basically keep my travels going, even though I had some savings. But it just happened that way.
That's amazing. I think there's two massive learnings that I would take from that. And the first one being that you were really open to the skills that you had, and it wasn't necessarily that you had to stick with law to begin with. So you mentioned that you had so many skills that you could do freelance, like your languages and stuff. And I think that is one massive important piece of advice for anyone that's thinking about doing this, is that don't get too cocky with your corporate background. If you're gonna go and quit and travel the world, you have to kind of take, like, a humble approach and just say, what skills can I sell that for a lot less money than I earned in corporate to begin with, to try things out and just, you know, build the cash flow up. And I think that's a really, really amazing approach. And eventually, you know, you'll get there, and there's possibilities to make more money than you did in your corporate job. But initially, you just have to be so open-minded and kind of humble in that sense. And then the second thing,
100% agree with that. Yeah, that's such an important thing to keep in mind, definitely.
Yeah, I really liked it when you said that. And then the second thing that I pull out from that as well is that drawing attention to the fact that, yeah, okay, these opportunities seem really lucky, but at the same time, if you hadn't quit your job, if you hadn't, like, gone to Bali and you weren't at that dinner table around these digital nomads, that conversation would never have happened. You would never have thought of that. So in a way, there's so much value in just going and just putting yourself in the arena, putting yourself in the environment, and these opportunities will come to you. I like, more so than if you were, you know, still on the Gold Coast in that corporate kind of environment.
Yeah, so true. Like, I think a lot of times people are so scared to, you know, as you said, quit your job and just go for it. They overthink so much. They want to have, like, a 6 months, 12 months plan. And that's what's holding people back, to be honest. Once you make that decision and you just go for it, you'll figure it out, and a way will present itself, even if you don't see it 100%. Before that. And even me, like, when I started, I was still also, like, I was always kind of looking online on, you know, Australian job sites to look, like, is there anything more that I can, you know, complement my salary, so to speak. And I was doing government grants for, like, this one office in Sydney that was also tax related, what I was doing before. So I was doing that a bit. I remember doing an odd job where I did a revision of a PhD for a guy, and, you know, just, like, little bits and pieces. Like, you'll always find something, and especially these days where you've got platforms like Upwork and all the other ones, Airtasker, and
100%.
All that. You can always find an odd job and make some money. And obviously it came to a benefit that I was traveling in Asia, where the living costs are really cheap. So that's always a plus. But yeah, a lot of times I feel that people, you know, see profiles who are like killing it out there in the online business space, and they don't see the whole picture.
Like, yes,
from the moment where you had to make the decision, where you had to dive fully into the uncertainty of what's going to come, and then starting to grow. And now I'm really lucky to be able to say, you know, I've got a fully successful online business, but it took me like almost 2 years. This didn't happen at all overnight. And I've always sort of had that, you know, I've never been too stubborn or anything to just do what needs to be done in order to basically survive or make it. Like, my degree in Australia costed me over 100,000 grand, and I just had to make means. Like, I had that law office job, and at the same time I was teaching swimming lessons to kids at a swimming pool and doing full-time studies. So it's like, I've always had that mentality to just make it work somehow, and I think that really helps. If you just take day by day and make a decision, then the way will present itself.
Yeah, I love that. And it's a matter of priorities as well, because at that moment you were like, this office thing is not for me, so whatever I'm doing, as long as I can get out of that, it's okay. So don't get me wrong, like, you have to graft, and it is scary sometimes, and it is not as comfy as people make out. But I think both of us think the same thing. If you've managed to escape the office and we're in a beautiful sunny country, that's enough for the moment, and happy to work hard to make it happen. I love that. Okay, so let's go on to the tax law subject, because I'd love to help some of the listeners out as well, and I know you have so much knowledge. So what are the kind of questions that people tend to ask you? And I know we were going to talk about a few sort of myths and misconceptions that people think of when it comes to tax law, and I guess from like my point of view, it's just, it can be very confusing for someone who has multiple streams of income. Say they've, you know, started a startup, or they're also doing a bit of consulting and all these other stuff on the side, which a lot of like remote workers are doing, and they're not spending hardly any time in their home country. It's really confusing with where to set up your company, what to charge what to, and all the opportunities, and it can just be really, really like overwhelming, which I expect is what your friends were talking about at dinner. So tell us a little bit more about like how you're helping people and what you're generally hearing.
So yeah, the number one thing that I hear is, I'm confused, I've got no idea, you know, what to do and where to even start. And that's the worst part about it, because there's so much information out there. There's so many digital nomad forums, and there's a lot of misinformation out there, like people, you know, just going and doing stuff and then other people mimicking them. And it's honestly, if you're right now in a position where you've got no idea where to pay your taxes or what to do, you're not the only one. Everyone's in the same boat. And with that also comes the fact that not even governments know what they're doing. You know, like, for example, in Australia, the Australian tax residency laws were drafted in 1936 or something like that. And that doesn't reflect at all the way we're living today. And since 2017, the government has been trying to design new tax law, but they're struggling with it. Like, it's been taking them 3 years to find new laws that fit like our lifestyle today. So it's completely normal to feel kind of lost of where you're at. But also with that comes a lot of times the fact that there is so much room for interpretation within international tax law, and there are many gray zones, and there might well be the case that you fall within a gray zone. And even though you feel like you should be paying somewhere taxes somewhere, sometimes you just are not catched within the system, and that can be to your benefit, you know. And although I don't advocate at all people not trying to have tax residency or not having to pay taxes anywhere, I always come up with solutions that make it possible for people to establish new tax residency. But even just for people to hear that they are not falling within the law, that they are falling within a gray zone, and that that's okay if, you know, national laws don't cover everything, even that sometimes makes people feel so much calmer and helps them out greatly. Because another thing is that so many lawyers and accountants, they will know exactly what to do within their borders. But once you start overcrossing any border, no one really knows what to do anymore. So,
this is the trouble with people. So people that, I guess there's people that are jumping around the world all the time. They could be spending a maximum of like 14 days in their home country. It's so interesting. So where should they be paying taxes, if that makes sense? So can you tell us a little bit more about this gray zone? Like, what's an example of someone that might fall into that?
Well, exactly like you were saying, someone that is moving around a lot and doesn't even have a permanent address anywhere because they're not renting really. They're like maybe just renting off Airbnb, and a lot of countries will consider you a tax resident after 6 months, and digital nomads oftentimes travel around 3 months and then move to the next destination, if not even shorter. So that's well possibly then the case that you don't really have a new tax residency somewhere. But a lot of mistakes are also done within leaving your home country. I see that so many times where people just take off and they basically, you know, they're ready, they pack their bags, they're off living the dream, but they kind of forget what their home country's tax residency rules were. And in so many places, you actually have to pay exit taxes before you leave,
right?
And you trigger capital gains taxes, or you're still considered a tax resident even though you've left for the next 5 years or something like that. So that you have to be really careful and just think about those things.
Yeah, so would you say it's much more like on the basis that you know you work with clients, and I know most of your work's been quite one-on-one and it's kind of going to change, but would you say it's much more like case-by-case basis, like you have to kind of look into that person's circumstances?
Yeah, most definitely, yes, because it really depends where you're from, first off, and then it depends where are you in right now. Are you traveling in Asia? Are you more geared towards South America, Central America, or Europe even? And then, what are your preferences? So it's really a case-by-case study, which keeps it interesting for me, which is what I love what I'm doing. It's kind of like putting a puzzle together every day, but it's not easy for people to figure it out, because just because your friend has done something like an international corporate structure and set up tax residency somewhere else doesn't mean that that's applicable to you at all.
Yeah.
And that just makes things a bit hard for me to, you know, try and bring that message over to people. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what are the kind of myths that, I know we were chatting about this before, are there any kind of like common misconceptions that people have around this?
Well, a lot of the times I think people are really scared about taxes. That's the number one thing. Like, I think when you hear tax, it's like, oh my God, no, I don't want to have to deal with it. And I just, you know, want to make people aware that it's written law. Obviously, you know, you need to know how to interpret the law, but also with that, the international tax law comes also international corporate structures. And a lot of times it's sort of those concepts that people have reserved for larger companies, such as like Google, Apple, Starbucks. You know, you hear of all this international corporate structure that they've set up in Ireland and Netherlands and whatnot. And it's just so foreign to us. But really what I'm kind of trying to bring across is that really it's not. Like, you can even apply those concepts to your own situation. Those laws are available to everyone, to every individual, and you can take benefits out of those laws. Obviously, you're not going to be able to like negotiate with the government like Apple did, you know, a special tax rate.
Yeah.
But still, there are ways that those laws are still applicable to like small entrepreneurs, like online businesses. Why not? And why shy away from something that is available to you at this point and that will be very beneficial? And I really think we shouldn't limit our actions to the borders if we're already moving around. Like, why shouldn't we set up somewhere else if our lifestyle has already changed so much?
Amazing. Yeah, it's nice to hear that kind of reassurance, because I definitely fit in that bracket of hearing tax and being like, oh, I don't know, don't ask me. For anyone listening, what would be your advice to someone that's thinking, oh, I'm so confused about my taxes, but listening to this, they'll definitely need to have a think about it. What would be your advice for the next steps they could take on that?
The advice that I would give them is don't freak out. There is a solution for everything. Maybe start looking at what the tax laws are where you came from. That would be the first step, more than, and that's the most important step, to be honest, because if you fall into the category of people who's just left and didn't really worry about, you know, all the stuff you had going on with your last government, then make sure that you ticked off all of the boxes and left, you know, with everything in place. So that's where I would start. And then, only then would I start looking into options of like setting up offshore or like gaining tax residency somewhere else. That also thinking, which is something that's really curious to me, is that a lot of digital nomad hubs are set up in places that are not at all tax beneficial to them, like Bali, Thailand, Mexico. So start thinking maybe about ways around it. I know that there's currently also a trend of moving a bit more away from those digital nomad hubs. Like, not everyone enjoys, you know, being within that little bubble, if I may say so. So yeah, start looking at different tax systems, how you could benefit. Also start listening around, you know, what other people are doing. Obviously, always with just be cautious that, like, that you, it's not necessarily applicable to you, but you might still be able to take benefits of it.
Yeah, amazing advice. I love that. And also, if anyone's particularly confused, they can always reach out to you at Wanderous Wealth as well and get some like real advice. I think that something like that is just so, it can be so valuable, and it can pay dividends, you know, if there's opportunities to structure in the right way, if you know what I mean. And it's not common knowledge to people that they have opportunities to structure in different ways.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And yeah, if anyone wants to work together with me, happy to do so. And the way I usually work is that I do all the research and all the advice part, because I'm a bit of a nerd and I love reading the laws of different countries.
Everyone's like, yes, sign me up.
But then I've got a large network of accountants all around the world that I've established over almost the last 2 years, who are then basically the executors of the plan. Like, they will go and make sure, you know, that your tax returns are all right in place, and that if you want to establish a full corporate setup, they will take care of it and do everything for you. And it's been tough to find accountants and other lawyers to work with who are knowledgeable in that field. Like, that's why my network is so important to me. But yeah, I'm confident and I trust those people now, and have worked together with them on a lot of cases. So, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. That's amazing. And I'm going to link all of your contact details and things in the show notes for people to go to if they want to reach out. So we are coming up to time, but I have three quick fire questions just to finish, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Perfect. So the first one is, what's your favorite place that you've ever traveled to?
Cold Coast, Australia. No, outside of that, which is now basically my home base, I really like Bali, Uluwatu, which is funny that Uluwatu, I've made a home base out of both places that I love the most. But yeah, that's just where I kind of
that's
feel
the
most
dream, though.
At home. Yeah,
yeah, that's amazing. Okay, and what do you love most about working remotely?
The freedom to decide when it fits me best to work, the freedom to just get up in the morning and be like, you know what, today I really want to go for a walk before starting to work, or today I really want to go for a surf or to the beach. Yeah, just the freedom. Yeah,
I totally agree. It just gives you the opportunity to kind of maximize your productivity in the day based on how you're feeling that day, because mm-hmm. you don't feel the same every day, you know.
No, not at all.
I love that. Okay, and then the final question is, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received, or kind of the life mantra that you live by?
The life mantra that I live by, to take every day, just take every single day as it comes. Because I've just learned that, you know, making plans, long-time future plans, it always turns out to be different.
So, yeah.
And long-term plans always freak you out. Like when I start thinking about the future, I get anxious.
Yeah, I know.
So honestly, just like take it day by day, whatever choices, decisions you have to make day by day, and just... somehow, if you keep being consistent and show up every day, keep being accountable to yourself and to whatever decisions you have to take, yeah, you'll create your future and hopefully a positive future.
Yeah, I think that's amazing advice. I love that, Kathy. Okay, so where can the listeners find you, find Wondrous Wealth, and how can they get in touch?
So I mostly hang out on Instagram on my personal page, which is mm-hmm. at Kathy McPaul. My business, I've also got a business page on Instagram, which is wondrouswealth.wealth. That's what it is. and then I've also got a website, wondrouswealth.com.
Amazing. I'll put that in the show notes.
So yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Well, it's been great speaking to you, and I know so many of the listeners will find so much value in what you've said, so thank you so much for your time.
No, I appreciate you having me on this episode. Thank you so much.
So that's the end of the episode. I hope that you enjoyed it. I'd be very grateful if you found it useful, if you could share it with one friend or on your social media. That would be amazing. And other than that, all the notes are in the show notes. And I shall speak to you next week.